Is your business stuck in one spot, struggling to grow? Our 8-week ProFit Business Accelerator at winninggym.com/grow has your back. Sign up now for easy wins. No more struggle, just straight growth. You've got this. Now let's head on back to the show.
You are listening to the Built to Grow podcast, delivering the knowledge in all things fitness business. We help gym owners win. Here are your hosts, Tim Lyons and Randy Engston.
All right, welcome back to the Built to Grow podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lyons, in a special Zoom episode, joined as always by Randy Engston. What's up, buddy?
Hey, my guy.
Hey, my guy, from all the way across town. Yep. And our special guest coming all the way from New York That's right. City. Yeah, Mark Fisher, welcome to the Built to Grow podcast.
Thank you so much. True honor to be here and hang with you, gents. Great way to spend my Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
Glad to have you.
Nothing better. So guys, I just got a chance to meet Mark in person. I've known about Mark for years. He's a friend of a mutual friend of ours and, he's doing some great stuff. Got a chance to hang out in Chicago at Perform Better where he spoke. I got to sit in on your presentation, Mark. Amazing stuff. And then we had a little dinner and some cocktails even.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't remember much from that night, but that's what I do. So it was great to meet Mark. Mark, for those that don't know you yet and they need to know you, why don't you give them a quick spiel, a little 30-second deal, and kind of catch everybody up.
Yeah, I'll give you the quickies. So I am probably most notorious for running a very unusual gym in New York City called Mark Fisher Fitness, which is known for doing our best to provide a very serious fitness experience. But the tagline is ridiculous humans, serious fitness. So I come from a nerdy strengthcoach.com, Perform Better, Teen Nation background, but I was a professional actor. So Mark Fisher Fitness was largely my attempt to make a love letter to my friends in my community and to synthesize the very best practices I knew how to integrate from my mentors and the people I looked up to, but make it fun and interesting for our clients. So as examples, we don't call our members clients, we call them ninjas. And it's not a gym, it's the enchanted ninja clubhouse of glory and dreams. And our mascot is the unicorn, and the whole thing is very weird and fun. And we were fortunate that we seem to have struck a nerve in New York City. So for a little bit more context, since MFF opened in 2011, we've done like some pretty like loony numbers. Like we're well north of $30 million at this point. We were on the Inc. 500, one of the fast growing companies in America. We got featured in a lot of media publications. And that led to what is most of my time and attention these days is another company called Business for Unicorns that specifically works with gym owners to help them create more income, more impact, and more freedom. So that's what a lot of my time is focused on. The other thing that is relevant to this convo, which has also been a very interesting experience full of interesting learnings for me, like the other two businesses, is I'm also a franchisee in friend of the podcast, Rick Mayo's emerging personal franchise brand, Alloy Personal Training. So I have the first of what I hope to be a bunch of units that is currently up and running in New Jersey. And that has been very interesting and fun because as you might expect, running a gym in New York City that is a glitter rainbow unicorn gym that has done some zany numbers with a large staff is very different than running a very simple two-person operation in a suburb of New Jersey with no personal brand. So I think between those businesses and the coaching, it has given me an interesting vantage point to look at the industry writ large. And I now am here having fun with you two kind people on this podcast.
A great story. And kudos to you because I was talking to Randy about you buying that Alloy or joining the Alloy team over there and getting a franchise going, where you have this, your unicorn, and then you went completely about as opposite as you can get, right? Yeah. Franchise, no room for any creativity whatsoever, but a strong business, right? A systematized business that's scalable. And I love that you, I don't know. I mean, some people have these egos, right? Like my thing's the best thing, but you definitely went the other way with it. And it's like, I want to see what this is about. So what made you decide to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, so great question, because you're right. A lot of people, particularly people who are familiar with my work, I think were very confused when I did this. And I think there's a few pieces. I think the first thing is my ego is attached to winning, right? My ego is not attached to me or any particular thing that I'm doing. So although it is true that Mark Fisher Fitness is creative and I am a very eccentric person, as new people will find out through this podcast, I'm actually pretty, I think, operationally minded as far as a business owner goes. And the real talk about MFF is, as much as I love it, it's like, listen, it's a love letter that I made for a specific community. And there are some things about that model that it has are not perfect, right? And it's a business that has achieved in some situations in spite of itself. And it's almost defined by the fact it's not particularly scalable. It's even leaving the operational inefficiencies aside and the complexity, it's just very unique. So I knew that that was not a vehicle that I was going to be copy pasting tons of locations of. And to be transparent, I'm still planning to open up some more locations in the New York City area. Mm-hmm. But I liked the idea of outsourcing some of my brain to a franchise, a guy like Rick. I don't have that kind of ego. I believe in the model. I like that it's simple. Sometimes I make things too complex. I think I've gotten better at that at this point in my career, but I invite having some guardrails. And then the other thing I want to, you know, acknowledge was a factor is all of us, our career progresses. I think we are asking ourselves at any given moment, or should be, how do I leverage the existing resources, assets that I have to move in the direction of the life that I want? So in this particular situation, part of me making this decision was having a boots on the ground operator that could be boots on the ground in New Jersey. I don't have the bandwidth at this point to spend a lot of time there. I frankly don't spend a lot of time at Mark Fisher Fitness at this point. My most of my day is Business for Unicorns. So working with a business partner allowed me to leverage a group of systems that I trusted and believe in from knowing Rick. It allowed me to invest my capital in a way that I thought I could get a better return on this because I know how to pull the levers of this kind of business. And importantly, Greg, my partner, somebody that I trusted to be on the ground and do that kind of day-to-day stuff that I won't have the bandwidth for. So I'll pull up there, but that's a little bit of my thinking behind that.
Very cool. Yeah. And we've looked into it quite a bit and we still may, right? I mean, Rick came out and I love it, right? Like if I could do it all over again, that would be the model, right? Just keep it small, yeah. Rubber stamp them out. So, yeah, and he knows that. So, yeah. So very cool. So you've got a long tenure in this industry, been doing it a while, kind of both ends of the spectrum, and you're coaching gym owners, which is obviously something we both believe in, and helping gym owners win is, it's a battle sometimes, right? Sometimes despite themselves, right? We try to help them get out of their own way sometimes. Yeah, there's just a lot of pressure on gym owners. I know that they're bombarded. They see, you know, these quick fix schemes, shiny ball syndrome, all the things. And
I'd love to
kind of hear what like your non-negotiables are in a land of all these whiz-bang tactics that are thrown in their face, because you got a book. We'll talk about the book, but like, let's talk about the tried and true marketing strategies that you got to live by that, you know, maybe you'll test over here with some stuff, but we got to do these three things, whatever it is.
Yeah. Great question. So the book obviously goes into a lot of greater detail about a lot of these, but if I'm thinking very high level, I got the business owner in front of me. You know, maybe the first thing I would like to emphasize before I even get into like, okay, here's like four things you just got to do is respect the law of the farm. I'm thinking a lot lately about the law of the farm. So I confess I have a real soft spot for 1970s personal development. So I listen to a lot of Jim Rohn. I love Stephen Covey. And the thing that unfortunately is hard to grasp for a lot of gym owners, and sometimes with good reason, because they're desperate. I understand that. Sometimes people open up the gym, they get in a bad place, they're scared, they need to make changes, they need to make money fast, and I get all that. And I don't think there's a way to get out of the law of the farm. So I think the first thing is a mindset to understand you're going to reap what you sow. If you're not planting seeds, if you're not tilling the land, we wouldn't expect that come harvest that it's going to be a bountiful harvest of crops. So I think the first thing to understand is there are no quick fixes if we're being really honest. Okay. So that's the first thing.
Yep.
The second thing from there is it is true, however, that if we do the most important things first and we do things in some kind of sequential manner and focus on the most important foundations, obviously that's going to get us better results than if we're scattershot or radically doing tons of things in a half-assed manner and sometimes not even consistently. So at a high level, I'm thinking the very first thing you're going to need, regardless of the model, and I know we can maybe dig into our shared thoughts about the best model, is you're going to need some kind of offer, some kind of, what is the first thing that they do? And again, that can look at a lot of things, but there needs to be some obvious, easy, this, if you're interested in working with us, this is the first thing that you do. Yeah, I think from there, probably a good idea to have a good website, a website that loads easily with a clear call to action, a clear headline, because if people are looking for gyms in your area, you want to be showing up and you want to have a place that you can direct leads to where it's obvious exactly what to do next, which is take the first step to the first thing you want them to do. And on the way, of course, get their contact information, right? Because building the list is a super important thing, which leads to the next couple things I would say are the primary things you got to do, which is manage your list of leads, right? Because it's all downstream of people that know you, who can come to like you and trust you, and then optimally hire you in response to an offer you make. Well, the first thing I'd have people do, and I guess I tie this with the offer perhaps, is let's organize the list of all the people that already know you. So if you've been in the business for a while, if you have a gym or you're a trainer, you'll have some, it's maybe small, but you'll have a list of former clients and unconverted leads that you have a official, explicit professional relationship with. And I would actually suggest you also organize your list of personal relationships of people you would say hello to in the grocery store that should know that you have fitness services to offer that could either be a fit for them or importantly, if not for them, then for people they know. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we got our offer. We got a website that can deliver the offer. We've organized the contact database of all the people that already know you and like you and trust you. Well, from here, if we want more leads, right, we want more people that know you exist. And this is real simple because you kind of got two ways to do this. If we break this down in a very reductive way, you either pay for the leads with money and you pay for them through digital advertisement. And that is a thing that can make sense at a certain point, depending on your situation. It's not always the first arrow I pull from the quiver because you're going to need some automations. You're going to need to be tenacious. You're going to need to follow up. Throughput's not what it was 5 years ago. Your other option, you're going to pay for these leads with time and pushing through social anxiety. And that means you're going to go talk to strangers. We're going to pretend like it's 2010 and you're going to go talk to strangers. You're going to go talk to people dressed up in your gear in your area. And maybe you have a nice little business card with your offer and a call to action. So you're going to try to get their contact information and you're going to talk to, let's call it 10 people per week that you don't know. And you're going to get in the habit of telling people you don't know about who you help, how you help them, and if they're interested, what they could do next if they want to find out more, right? Now, there's a lot of different versions of meet strangers. It could literally be going into a local Target parking lot. It could be talking to people online for coffee. It could be talking to the moms and dads that are dropping off or picking up their kids. It could be having a table at a live event for your town. It could be doing it at scale by talking to their business owners that will promote your business and allow you to meet other strangers. But at a high level, if you're looking to grow your audience and you've already organized all the people that you know, well, then you have to meet strangers and you're either going to pay for those strangers or you're just going to pay for those strangers with time by going and talking to them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some hard work involved here, huh? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. And there's also like fear, right? And that's the thing that's been interesting too. Because again, I work with gym owners and not only that, but I just did this. That's part of why this is so top of mind for me because the gym in New Jersey is different than Mark Fisher Fitness. So I want to, you know, let's be real talk. Mark Fisher Fitness is an unusual brand. We had an unusual amount of success in part because the list of people that already know you and like you and trust you was very big for me. Mm-hmm. I had been an actor. I had worked with a lot of people. I had a couple thousand people in New York City I knew, and I hit the jackpot because Broadway is a very insular community that's quite large, but it's very insular. And it's really, it's all in the vicinity of one specific neighborhood. So it was pretty easy for me to capitalize on that. So that allowed me to bypass a lot of other things. I would also note, importantly, you know, we were good at what we did. So our referrals, even though I didn't have the best referral systems in the beginning, people were dragging their friends in by their hair. But even referrals is a function of the first bucket because referrals is a function of how many clients you have. You only have 10 clients, you're only going to get so many referrals, even if those people love you. So when I opened up the Alloy, part of what drove me to do it, which is not this, you know, it didn't make my life simpler, right? I'll say that. Mm-hmm. But I really value growth. I love learning. And I knew correctly I was going to learn things. So it became apparent that in this particular gym where I didn't have these people that I knew, right? And that's maybe some of you listening. Maybe you're thinking, okay, well, I don't have a lot of clients. I haven't trained a lot of people. I don't know anybody who just moved to this area. Well, now you're going to need the last thing I was talking about. You'll probably need a digital strategy and you need to go and talk to the strangers. Because the thing that I learned, maybe I didn't learn new, but I relearned is, yeah, it can be a little intimidating, right? So I had to go out into New Jersey, bring my team into the parking lot with our nice business cards and our clean, shiny alloy gear and start conversations, right? Go up to people and be like, hey there, big smile. Do you live in the area? And then start a conversation. And listen, a lot of those people are not going to want to talk to you. And I'm in New Jersey. They might shank me, right? Yeah. If you're in New Jersey, you go up the car too quick. They're going to shank you. They might have a gun. You don't know, right? New Jersey is a serious place, right? So I get that that can be very intimidating. And I want to influence you, I want to sell you on this and say that if what you're doing is helpful to people, it is an unqualified moral good to put yourself out there. You're not a used car salesman.
Right.
You're not high pressuring. You're not even really requesting. You're being generous. You're making invitations. You're inviting them. Hey, I do this thing that's helpful. I'd love to be able to help you. If it made sense, we'd love to get in here and try out whatever the thing is. What's your best contact information?
There you go. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, we always. I want to say this one thing, and I'll let you talk. We always we need to remind gym owners we're not selling cigarettes to kids on the corner.
Yeah, totally.
What we do is pretty good, right? Like it's good. Yeah. It helps people. So I just want to throw that out there, right? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I realized, I mean, from everything you mentioned, the Jim Rohns, and I'm a fan of those old greats, the Jims, the Zig Ziglars, Dappers, all of it.
Dennis Waitley.
Yep, 100%. But the one thing I know that all of them preach, and it's something that I can already tell is a way that you operate, is it's relationship first.
Yeah.
Right. And that, like, that to me goes to the task at hand. We're not just pitching somebody cold fitness opportunities. You're trying to build a relationship and show and truly build that like, trust, and respect factor before the expectation of the sale.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, we live in a time where digital marketing has made it has made a lot of us almost cold to the fact that we have a relationship business, right? It's face to face. People matter, not just, you know, the lead and like it's arbitrary, like this person doesn't exist yet type of thing. How have you seen that shift when it came from the New York gym, when it came to, you know, your relationships kind of spawned and started a lot of that?
Yeah.
You know, how did you, what is different about how you've gone about that with the alloy in New Jersey? Because again, you're boots on the ground and you're doing the manual work that most people you know, shove off to the side type of thing. But how have you seen that impact the opening and like the launch of the alloy facility as opposed to just, you know, kind of playing like a pure digital marketing strategy? Do you feel like that has really allowed that to kind of take off with a greater speed and ability?
Totally. It's been very important. And here's the real talk. We didn't do that great of a job in the beginning of this. Right. So the real talk is we really kind of dropped the ball and fumbled this. And there are a lot of things that went into that. You know, I'll say that I don't think Greg and I, and he would, you know, say this, we're here. I don't think we don't realize quite how much teaching we had to do. So one of the things that I'm so grateful about this experience, I knew I was signing up for, right, is like, they always say, what got you here won't get you there. And what that means is the things that got you your certain level are not going to get you the next level.
Attention gym owners, are you ready to take your business to the next level? Join our exclusive Facebook group, ProFit Accelerator, and unlock the potential to scale your gym to $30,000 a month and beyond. In the ProFit Accelerator group, we're going to focus solely on helping gym owners just like you win. We offer regular training sessions and share our best proven strategies to boost your business. Join us now by searching for ProFit Accelerator on Facebook. Be part of a community that's all about success and growth, the ProFit Accelerator, where gym owners thrive. All right, now let's get back to the show.
Well, you know, I did $1 million in the first year of my business, right? So like I kind of started here. I never had to get from to here before I was getting to there. So a lot of the skills that I had with a larger team, with a more operational firepower, they just didn't really transfer here, right? And again, that was very useful for me to have to go back to beginner mindset. The good news is I know how to run a gym, so it's not that this was all new to me, but in the beginning, we had really didn't do the best job with it. And what I discovered I need to do, and this is a potential takeaway for gym owners listening, which is so obvious, but I'll just say out loud, is you have to A, lead from the front in the beginning particularly, right? Like you can't expect them to do things that you're unwilling to do, number one. Number two, you really have to train your staff, right? And we've had some changes in the staff with there. I think we had some lovely people. They were not ultimately the right fit. There was not some of the things we needed for that position. And I'll say that we have responsibility for that too. We made those decisions. I think they're lovely people, but I'll say we finally, as of a couple of weeks ago, have a team we're on fire about. But even with these hyper competent people we have, something like that, I had to, you know, operationalize it. I had to clarify, okay, how often are we doing this per week? Had to track it, got to inspect what you expect. If that matters to me, okay, well, now it's on the weekly scorecard. If each of you are going to do, let's say 10 conversations where you give away cards per week, we're going to track that. And then if it's not happening, then we start talking about why not? What's getting in the way? That can help me support them. And then related to that, also giving them a specific script. Now, I realize we're talking in a very granular way about one strategy, but in general, I think this is a microcosm of all of leadership. And I'll say something that I know I had to work on that sometimes I see with gym owners that can be a little hard to figure out is, you know, people talk a lot these days, I think, about how the younger generation doesn't always want to work and they have different values. And listen, that absolutely might be true. But I'll tell you, when I first started leading people, I expected them to be like me in a lot of ways. And even though I think I did a good job of understanding, they're never going to care as much as me as the owner. I definitely did management by abdication, which is to say, I'd say, and you know, you read the business books, right? I read a lot of the business books and they're talking about, you know, you're the CEO, you know, just you set the agenda. You just manage by objective. You just tell them what to do and you get out of their way and you let them go do it. And I think that's great advice in some contexts. And I think for most gym owners listening, the thing to understand is most of the people you hire, you're not hiring people with, you know, you're paying several $100,000 to come in with massive batteries included. You really have to lay it out, right? So that's things like, you know, creating clear SOPs, creating clear scripts. And I just want to reiterate again, I know we're talking about this business card play, and a lot of you probably would benefit from literally going to do this on Monday, like do those three things. And I would encourage you to consider what are all the places in your business you need to do that? Because that's, you know, to end this question, that's a lot of what we wind up having to do a better job of with Alloy is putting in places those systems so that way we could work through the team, particularly in my case, because I can't go there. I'm busy. You know, I already have a job. So, and now it feels very fun, but you know, like the joys of entrepreneurship, it didn't feel very fun in some moments when we were not feeling good about how we were doing. And I will tell you today, I'm feeling very excited and thrilled with this prospect. And it's very satisfying to be like, okay, all right, we know how to do this. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, you're speaking our language when you talk about systems. I mean, that's everything that we talk. I mean, when it comes to scale and, you know, multi-facility ownership, things like that. I mean, even parlaying into other areas of fitness and coaching and things like that, right? If you don't have those systems in play, you have no bandwidth to be able to spread yourself thinner. So couldn't agree more.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the future. Where do you think the puck's going? I definitely have our thoughts around this, but I'd love to hear from another business coach in the fitness space. Like, where are you thinking, man? And I'll chime in as we need to, but I'm guessing we're probably pretty similar.
Yeah, I'm sad to say it might be boring for a long time, listeners. Because I catch the podcast. I think we're probably on the same page. I think that in a vacuum, all things being equal, I really like a small group model. I think it's the best value proposition for the consumer. I think it's a business model that makes the most sense for the owner. It allows you to pay your staff a living wage. So I tend to like it for those reasons. I also like it because as a fitness nerd, first and foremost, I just think it's a better product than classes. That's not to say that they don't serve a place, right? Sure. I think classes can absolutely be an awesome thing. I think classes in 2024, I'll tell you, particularly in a market like New York City, it's very hard to do unless you're packing a lot of sardines in a can, right? You either have to be charging a super premium or you have to be really down market. And both of those are tough places to be, because the third reason that I like small group personal training is the class space has just gotten very, very crowded. So in addition to it not being my favorite business model, in addition to it not being my favorite fitness product, and in addition to it not being my favorite marketing approach, Yeah, it's not my favorite positioning. I tend to like a small group model best. And again, listen, it's a big boat. Like I work with a lot of different gyms that do different things. Mark Fisher Fitness still offers some class as part of what we do. And I would say personal training, I think, will continue to be an important model for a lot of people. And that is hard on the opposite side, right? Because for personal training to work for you as a gym owner, it's just really hard to make your numbers work because you have to charge so much. There's not an unlimited number of people that can charge, that can pay that top tier in a given market. And even then, there's just less opportunity because of the way those sessions are serviced for you to pay your team as much as you want. So again, I'm not trying to poo-poo on either class or personal training, but I confess, like you and probably many listeners, my personal hot take is that small group is probably the best way to go. And to define that specifically, I'll say this, my personal favorite is probably 6-on-1 with some kind of template that has customizations. I think if you are a nerdier trainer or gym owner and you've got a nerdy staff, I think you could do a 4-on-1 with individualized programming, but then you would have to charge a commensurately higher price point. Mm-hmm. I think both of those could work. It just depends on, frankly, your skill level and how much scalability you want. I'd say 6-on-1 with centralized templates are a little bit of an easier lift technically. So I think it's a little more scalable. It's easier to find coaches to teach how to do that. 4-on-1 can work. If you've got a team of nerds and that's part of your value proposition and you've really, you know, owned the space of like, we're superstar technical rock stars, it's just hard to keep in staff the superstar technical rock stars. It's a little bit easier, this other model, I think, to coach up the coaches and get them to deliver the service at a high level.
Yep. I guess we're pretty much the same. There's nothing to go against here. Only thing I would say that we don't agree on is the nomenclature. And I think it's just a name. We call it semi-private. You call it small group. And
Even within that, I mean, Mark, you kind of gave a little bit of like the cusp of the difference, right? So, I mean, we've talked in the past, Tim, like I think your model has kind of progressed from almost a small group, kind of like a WOD type setup with the customization to truly individualized programming, but to, I don't want to say combat, but to deliver on the difficulty of coaching a 6-to-1 individualized, they've also created a in-house software that delivers our programming. Yeah. So our coaches are, you know, like our coach's job isn't having to come up with a new workout for somebody in front of them. We've got a system
For sure.
That handles the ability to deliver the individualized programming as wide as 6-to-1. So, I mean, I love it.
I mean, that sometime I need to introduce you to that. That thing's is amazing. So eventually we'll get there. But so we just got off of Iron Circle call. It's our mastermind group. And we were going talking about the trend in the industry of where I feel we need to go as, you know, leaders and gym owners that are kind of leading the pack is to against weight loss, against fat loss, towards strength training, towards muscle building. And the reason is this, and this is, I would love your take on this.
Yeah.
We offer, if at a gym level, if we offer weight loss as the solution, that also comes with a hell of a lot of hard work, dedication, discipline, lifestyle change. Whereas the alternative is a shot in the belly with Ozempic, and that's your weight loss solution for the global market. We know that 1 out of 8 Americans today are taking Ozempic, unfortunately, and it's going to be as high as 20-25% in 10 years is the estimate. Well, if that's the solution, you know what they can't compete with is muscle gain. You cannot get muscle gain from a shot. You can't even get it from steroids. You have to do the work, right?
Hey there, gym owners. Is your business standing strong, making at least $30,000 or more a month? And you're seeking the next challenge, like what's the next step in your journey? Well, look no further than the Iron Circle. Our elite growth community is the place for gym owners just like you who are not satisfied with the status quo. We'll show you how to take your business from good to great and from a strong gym into a powerful fitness legacy. Head on over to our website and apply to join the Iron Circle at ironcircle.net and start your journey to the next level today. All right, we'll see you inside the show. Bye.
So I would love to hear your talk. We're focusing on the marketing messaging being strength training, build muscle mass, live longer this way versus weight loss only.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think it's an interesting moment, right? Because there's a few different factors that are all converging in this particular moment. Mm-hmm. So first of all, there's a lot of strong opinions about, you know, the relative moral and ethics of even promoting fat loss in some communities, right? I think, you know, my strong stance is the research at this point suggests you're going to be healthier at a normal body weight, right? So that's like one piece right there. Yeah. But you're very right that the reality is strength training in and of itself, we can't even really promise fat loss. That's really a function of nutrition. Now, a gym, probably, I think my dream of a gym is it's providing some holistic health and wellness, fitness, whatever term you want to call it, coaching. And part of that would be at least some guidance on nutrition. But in practice, that is, it's a tougher lift for us. And there's easier ways for people to get that if the only goal is to lose weight. You know, these GLP-1 inhibitors, is that what they're called? Is the official name? Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in general, I'm out over my skis here about this, but my doctor is, do you guys know Spencer Nadolsky by chance?
Mm-mm. That doesn't sound
familiar. Like a evidence-based, like nerd, like fitness, super jack dude, happens to be my doctor. And he's a board certified, obesity medicine expert. And it's interesting because there's a great podcast he had with another buddy of mine, Dr. Sean Pastuch. And, you know, Spencer's general sense is that this could be a useful tool and it's getting overprescribed, right? And Sean is very concerned about this. He's another good buddy. He's very concerned that we're going to find there's lots of downstream negative things we're going to find out about this. And it seems, you know, true that if somebody really has a lot of clinical markers of health dysfunction that is a function of obesity, this could be a very valuable thing and the cost benefit almost certainly benefits taking it. If somebody is, Spencer's take is if somebody's looking for vanity, lose 15 pounds, that has a different cost benefit ratio and you're really potentially taking some risk to lose that weight, right? So that's, I'll just speak quickly to that just because that's like my thoughts on Ozempic. And it is true. We might be seeing, you know, some people are saying there's a gym session, right? Because everyone's taking Ozempic, so they're not working out. Because I'll tell you, one thing that's interesting from a marketing perspective, right? So if we zoom out to this from a principles, there's something to be said for giving people a promise they can taste and touch and point to, a clear promise, you're going to get this quantified result in X time, right? Or it's often formulated, here's how to get X specific results in X number of days without this thing you don't like. Here's how to yay without boo.
That's the
point. And for a long time, a lot of these challenges, and again, I'm not actually judging. I'm not necessarily anti it per se, frankly. But for a long time, the challenges were, you know, lose up to 20 pounds in 6 weeks with and I don't know. It's challenging because you're right. Like the gym can't really promise that. That's mostly, listen, it's going to help, but that's largely a function of nutrition, right? People that understand the game, it's like you can't out-train your diet. And it's also true that on the one hand, you can't out-train your diet, but you can do so many great health things with your fitness, right? And the data is so clear. With such minimal amounts of effort, you can... Your life, your longevity, your brain function, it's so profound, the changes that can happen. And listen, I'm not necessarily advocating for an absolute minimal effective dose. I'm just saying that if somebody is not necessarily losing a ton of weight, they're not eating as well as they could, but now they go from not working out at all to strength training a couple times per week, that is about as close to magic pill that we know of exists. Mm-hmm. So now as far as like what's the most attractive message to the consumer, It's going to be interesting. I think it'll depend on the submarket. It depends on the avatar. I think it's still true. A lot of people, weight loss is both sexy and frankly quantifiable, but it is also true that strength training right now is definitely the hottest thing. If you look at the trends, I think it was it Ursa's report or like I can't remember right anymore because I read so many industry thingamajiggies, but like the number one trend the past couple of years has been strength training, which again, you know, for people like us is both expedient and facilitates our confirmation bias because of what we like, but also we think it's true. So yeah, I think that like strength training is a great way to go. And from a marketing perspective, you know, I think one would also consider, which I'm sure you guys would agree, is what is the benefit that people want, right? What is the things they're saying in their head before bed? And how do you use that to make whatever your promises are in the website and in the email and also make realistic promises that people can actually do, right? Which is not probably 100 clients in a month or lose 30 pounds in 2 weeks.
There you go. And that's kind of the irony of working. I'm speaking to another coach that works with gym owners. Do you see a tie from even the habits or the way that gym owners operate that is the same as the clients that they're coaching?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And, you know, I'll say, like, with so much love to people listening, like, I don't even necessarily have like a problem with it. I don't think it's like helpful all the time, but I understand, like, you're a human. You want the things to be quicker. And just like the person that is in so much pain that wants the quick fat loss fix, I don't make them wrong for that. Just the gym owner that is freaking out because he's about to go home again and he's going to have his in-laws ask him, "You're still a trainer? Like, what the hell are you doing on? You married my daughter and this is the life you're giving her." Yeah. So there's that, you know, bleeding neck problem, as we say in sales. Like, that's tough. I get that. And, you know, I do think we can discuss the ethics of marketing, you know, and we can, there's probably a spectrum with which we can do our best to be on their agenda, to meet our clients where they're at, to meet and do our best to see the pain they're going through, but then also, you know, give them what they actually need, which yeah. goes back to the law of the farm, right? Which is acknowledging, look, I know you need to do these things. We will, to the best of our ability with a fitness client or a gym owner client, do the best we can to get you the fastest results within reason. But then ethically, there's some things that we just can't promise, you know, like, and we all know it's like silly, these like 100 clients in like a month thing, which I never even talk about. Cause again, I don't mind. It's silly. I don't want people getting hurt, of course, but like, we know that that doesn't work. And I just continue to want to stand for and advocate a more reasonable industry that supports our clients in reasonable goals and both meets the things that they want, not making it wrong, but invite them on a more realistic and sustainable journey. And I want the same for our gym owner friends. Agreed.
Very nicely put.
Good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we all, that's what we want as well. And we all want harmony. No, and
we just want to hug you, people. Want to hug you and be realistic.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's hard, and it can be difficult, right? I mean, when somebody has, like you said, the bleeding neck issues, typically they are in a position of,
they're panicking.
Desperation.
They're yeah.
Right. Yeah. They're grasping at anything that they can. And so it's unfortunate gym owners, you know, find themselves in that position. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is it's not necessarily wrong. I mean, those things exist for why they yeah. exist, but you know, the ethics behind it, when it comes to the exaggerations in marketing.
Yeah.
I think all of us can agree that we've seen the, especially for gym owners, right? It's yeah. become so exaggerated that it's difficult to sift through and know what's legitimate, what can actually help.
Yeah.
Or is it just flash in the pan marketing and then you pay somebody for a service and you never see a return, you know?
Yeah. And certainly for the end user that is, you know, problem aware, but not particularly solution aware, or they're just like looking for anything and anything, is a little yeah. naive. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where I think we all feel not great about it, right? Where we don't want to see people being taken advantage of by other people. And by the way, that the, you know, the approaches that I maybe think are obviously not going to be helpful, I don't usually ascribe that to malice. I think, well, this person's, they're trying to do their business and they're trying to be helpful. And, but ultimately the law of the farm is always going to win. So, you know, my hope is that over time, that's going to come out of the wash. And I think for people that, you know, whether you are a fitness business that is in it to be like a lifer and help your clients over the long haul, or you help gym owners, you know, I think reputation over time, all that stuff tends to come out in the wash and people start to suss out like who's the real and who's not. And again, I don't mean that as like a hateful judgment on those people, but yeah, I ultimately, like, the law of the farm matters. And yeah, it can be really, I feel a lot of empathy for the people on the shallow end of the pool, right? Where it's the people that are desperate and then the people that are promising the things that are like kind of hard to pull off. And I want everyone to win. And yes, I stand by my wish for them to do in ways that are sustainable and realistic. And I trust them all to make their decisions.
There yes. Amazing. Well, Mark, let's jump into this book that you just wrote, yeah. I should say. It's about yeah. marketing. Gym Marketing yeah. Secrets book.com, if that's correct. Let's talk about that for yes. a second. What's behind yeah. the pages? What's in the pages?
Yeah. So essentially this was my attempt to put together a model of how I'm currently thinking about all the things one could do for marketing. As we discussed, this pulls from my experience running this unusual gym in New York City, my experience launching this Alloy in New Jersey, my experience coaching gym owners through Business for Unicorns. And I wanted to create a comprehensive guide that one might think of as a supercharged checklist of all the things that you can do. I think we started with, I think, a very important conversation, which is like, what are the most important things if you're going to get started? Time is not an unlimited resource. And while we know things can only go so fast, we want them to go as fast as they can within reason. So the good news is you already heard on this podcast, the real bangers. Having said that, as you get more sophisticated, you have more bandwidth, let's say you're on the floor a little bit less, you have a little bit more resources and time and energy to push the gas a little bit harder on marketing. For a geographically constrained small business, there's not an unlimited number of things you can do, right? My hope was to create this comprehensive guide, a menu, if you will, for people to think through what are all the things that I could do to drive the business. And in the thing that the book can't do, unfortunately, is map that onto your skill set, the capacity you have, your business model. I think a lot of these strategies are very market dependent, right? I've talked a little bit about the very real difference between Midtown Manhattan and Franklin Lakes, New Jersey. So that's the type of stuff I think you do have to suss out as well, because certainly my suggestion is not that people do all of these things, but it is to acknowledge that there's a handful of foundational tools, things like an offer, things like a well-functioning website, things like a clear client avatar that you're building your business for. And then there's a bunch of systems that you need to generate leads so people know you exist. There are systems to nurture the leads. So over time, people come to like and trust you. And, you know, for gym owners, it's largely organic Instagram, email marketing, maybe a Facebook group. You got that going. I'm not sure that always works for brick and mortars these days, but in some markets it may. Then third, you have lead conversion. So now people know you exist. They've come to like and trust you. They're reading your emails. Now, what do we do when once people raise their hand for the offer that we put in place? How do we follow up with them? How do we have conversations to invite them to get really clear on what they want, why they want it, and how you could be a fit? And then the final section of the book, I would bolt on also the time management piece, which I think of as two big buckets. There's two kind of planners, right? Because again, time is the ultimate determinant. Well, you have your daily, weekly planner, which is literally as a gym owner, if you look at your week ahead, you look at tomorrow, what are you doing and when to do each of these activities to drive the ball forward, right? Because otherwise this could just be like a lot of theory. It's like, okay, I know I'm supposed to be doing this and I'm supposed to be doing that. And then I want to do it, but then I get distracted because I feel crappy doing it because I don't like to do it. So I'm going to check Facebook, right? That ain't good gym owner. So I think you need daily and weekly planners to really plan out what you're doing and when you're doing it. And then I think a marketing calendar is a supercharged version of that. And marketing calendars sound very complicated. And I know this is a more sophisticated audience listening, but it's really nothing more complicated than having a particular message about once per month to each of your audience subsets.
Perfect. That's great. And guys, we're going to put that link in the show notes. You can pick up that book. Is it a physical book or is this an ebook version?
This is a digital download. There is an Amazon one for somebody that's really excited about this. If you want a physical copy, which a lot of people do, you're welcome to go to Amazon and get a copy there. We're also giving them away at Perform Better if anybody's attending the upcoming events this summer, as well as some other events coming up. So yeah, you can either grab it at an event or you are welcome to go to Amazon if you want a physical copy, or you can just get the free digital download.
Fantastic, guys. That'll be the link in the show notes. And guys, go grab that. And of course, you have a podcast as well, Business for Unicorns, with your business partner.
Yeah.
I was just on. So amazing.
Michael Kier, yeah.
Yep. So that was awesome, guys. You could go check that out as well. So Mark, thanks for jumping on, man. I'm happy I met you, man. Happy we got a chance to connect and have dinner and break bread and have a conversation, brother. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time coming, Randy. It's great to connect with you too. Yeah. I hope and trust we will be staying in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. All right, guys, that's it for this episode. Until next time, keep changing lives. We'll see you on the next show. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Built to Grow podcast. If you want more help growing your business, join our free Facebook group, Profit Accelerator, helping training gyms grow to $30,000 a month and beyond. We'd love to see you there. Go check out the show notes for the link and keep building something great. And we'll see you in the next episode.